Welcome back to the Healthy Diabetic Podcast. As always, before we get started, please remember that nothing that you hear on this podcast should be considered medical advice or otherwise. Please always consult your medical team before making any changes to your diabetes management. Okay, if you have not had a chance to like, subscribe, leave a five-star review, I really would appreciate if you take a second, just hit that subscribe button, leave a five-star review. If you're listening to this episode on Apple Podcast, or you've listened to multiple episodes, hopefully on Apple Podcast, I believe Apple Podcast is the only platform that you can actually leave a written review. Let me know what you think of the show. Do you like it? Do you not like it? What types of topics would you like me to talk about, you know, moving forward? It's been such a pleasure over the last 3 years continuing to build content through the podcast, continue to give you guys just really good conversations and really good information that can help you stay in range and lower your A1C. So please make sure that you like, subscribe, and leave a five-star review and a written review. And the last thing I want to leave you guys with is, if you haven't seen on social media and any one of my platforms, I am getting ready to start a brand new case study for More Than A1C. As you know, if you've been listening to this show for a long time, or maybe if you just recently listened to the show, I created a 10-week coaching program called More Than A1C. It is literally the culmination of everything I've learned as a diabetic and as a coach. If you don't really know much about More Than A1C, if you're brand new to the channel, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in 2007, and I was lost, depressed, isolated. I felt so alone. And that, all those feelings, emotions, led to 3 years of denial. I denied my diabetes for the first 3 years and was in pretty bad shape. And over the last 17 years, I've been dramatically focusing on, one, improving my personal diabetes, and also helping those that struggle every single day. So More Than A1C was really out of necessity to figure out diabetes on a deeper level. I knew that something needed to change. I knew that some new type of education and way to learn had to, you know, change me different, because I couldn't find it. So More Than A1, that's what More Than A1C became. More Than A1C became my lifeline. I created More Than A1C, and it's been incredible taking people through this unbelievable program. So I'm starting a brand new case study because the program's it's evolved and it's going to change a little bit. So I'm really pumped about that. So I'm looking for new people that might be interested in getting into this new case study. So if you're interested, please make sure that you click on the link in the show notes that says More Than A1C. And I'll send you all the information that you need. All right, let's get with today's guest. I got to sit down with Norma Lyons. This conversation was like extra special for me on two fronts, because it affirmed something that I have been talking about for a very long time. And it also affirms to me that if you are a pre-diabetic, or if you are a type 2 diabetic, you don't have to necessarily go on medications. Or if you are on medications, you can dramatically reduce the amount of medications or get off of medications. And if you listen to last week's episode, you can put your diabetes in remission. So this was a really cool episode for me. Norma is was a pre-diabetic, and she changed her lifestyle, made some different choices, changed up her relationship with food, and really honed in on what she was actually consuming and eating in a more holistic way, and she was able to reverse prediabetes. So this stuff can happen, but you have to make the choice to do it. The other really cool thing that me and Norma talk about in this episode is carbohydrates. And if you've been listening to this show for a while, if you've been watching me on social media, I've been talking a lot recently about carbohydrates, because there's doctors, there's medical professionals, there's dietitians, there's everybody across the board. What do we do about carbohydrates? Should we reduce carbohydrates for weight loss? Should we reduce carbohydrates for if you're a diabetic? Are carbohydrates bad? We have all of this back and forth information and what I would consider misinformation, because there's one specific thing about carbohydrates, and even I would even put sugar in this category, that we're missing about starchy carbohydrates, or about just carbohydrates in general, and that is the quality of that food. When you consume white pasta versus quinoa, you are not going to get the same output from your blood sugar. And it could be the same exact gram, right? So if we're talking about grams, as diabetics, we cover with insulin, with, you know, the amount of grams of carbohydrates that we're consuming. That's what we do as type 1 diabetics. As type 2 diabetics, you guys do it a little bit different in terms of consuming carbohydrates. But as a type 1, if I ate 40 grams of white pasta or ate 40 grams of quinoa, which is going to have a better outcome on my overall health and my blood sugar? Well, of course, quinoa, because it's a better quality carbohydrate. So this is the conversation that we need to be having, not telling people that you should reduce or eliminate carbohydrates. It's the quality of the carbohydrates that you are consuming that is the real issue behind this. And me and Norma go back and forth on this. And you'll hear her story and her side of it. You'll hear my story and my side of it. And it's a really good conversation about carbohydrates. So if you're someone listening right now and you're so, you know, frustrated with nutrition or trying to figure out what to eat, this is a great episode for you. A great episode for you. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear this conversation. So without further ado, let's get with Norma Lyons.
All right. Well, my name is Norma, and I am otherwise known as Low Carb Norma.
Nice.
From my social media presence for the past 6 years, which kind of just evolved.
Yeah.
It started because, do you want me to go into how it kind of began? It all kind of began because I was actually diagnosed pre-diabetic in 2016. But, you know, they just kind of sent me on my way. They didn't really give me any information on exactly what that meant or any recommendations on what they, how they suggested for me to, try and fix that.
Okay.
Other than, you know, here's some drugs, you know, and this should, help you lower those levels. Come back and see us in 3 months.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
that's typical. That's the typical way that they do it. Yep.
That is so extremely unfortunate.
Yeah.
And I now, fast forward 6 years later, have realized that that is the common, unfortunately.
It is the common.
You know, I have people that come to me daily. You know, what do I do? I have no idea what to do. The doctors just want to give me medication, but I don't want to go on medication.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, you know, type 2, prediabetes, type 2 is, it can be modified with lifestyle changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can change that. So I dragged my feet and I didn't want to do anything about it. I was in denial for quite some time. Let's go back though. This is 2016. Let's go back to 1994 when I was pregnant with my first child.
I actually
had, what they call a borderline gestational diabetes.
Okay.
I never quite got my sugar levels to the point where it was actually diabetes, but they said, you are definitely borderline, which means that's going to put you at a higher risk as you get older. You're going to want to watch your sugar levels. So here we are, fast forward 25 years later. Sure enough, I was diagnosed pre-diabetic. And they're like, you're not type 2 quite yet, but if you don't do something, you know, you're sure going to end up there.
Yeah.
But they didn't quite tell me what to do other than take medication. So I did a lot of research on my own. Actually, I dragged my feet for quite some time and I decided not to do anything for, it was about a couple of years.
Mm.
And then I saw a photo of myself and I'm like, who is that person?
Mm.
I did not identify with the person that I saw. So that was my breaking point. And I'm like, okay, we're going to do something about this.
Yeah. That's,
and it happened to be the year my husband and I celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
And we were planning this really amazing trip to Jamaica. We had reserved this beautiful waterfront home. The first week we were bringing our best friends and then our kids were coming to join us the second week. And, you know, it was going to be a lot of fun in the sun. And I'm like, I'm not going looking like this. So that kind of was a motivator for me to do something about it. And all my little girlfriends, you know, they're all bikini clad girls. I'm like, all right, this is the year, in their first time in 30 years, I'm going to don a bikini. So that was kind of my motivation. Not so much that I was pre-diabetic. That should have been motivation enough, but it wasn't. So I got my budding gear and I, on my own, started reading labels, started eliminating sugar, realizing that, gosh, it's in everything. It's hidden in so much stuff. Sugar is everywhere. So that kind of, you know, was the beginning of my story and figuring out exactly what to do. And it took me, I probably lost, I think, 20 pounds the first year, just kind of figuring it all out on my own.
Yeah.
Then the second year came along and, that was when, sorry about that. That was, when, keto was really, really popular.
Ooh, okay.
I kind of just jumped right into keto at that time. Cause I'm like, okay, well, this is low carb, sugar free. And, I had like quick and fast, amazing results. I dropped like the last 20 pounds in like 3 months.
Hmm.
So I, you know, over a course of a couple of years, I had dropped like 40 pounds, but, and I got to my goal, but I mean, it was all just kind of hit and miss and figuring it all out on my own. Nobody actually sat down and explained it to me, you know, what to do. I completely eliminated carbs, which is not what we're supposed to do.
Right.
You know, complex carbohydrates are really important to balance our blood sugar.
Right.
So I got to a point where I completely eliminated carbs, all carbs, and my sugar numbers dropped and they got to an acceptable range. But then all of a sudden they started going back up again. And I'm like, what in the world? Why? I'm not doing anything different. I wasn't doing anything different because I wasn't incorporating. That was the difference, is I wasn't incorporating complex carbohydrates.
Yeah.
I didn't at that time understand, until since then I have worked side by side with nutritionists and health experts, and I've learned the importance of incorporating complex carbohydrates into your daily diet. So that's kind of where I've evolved from just completely eliminating carbs altogether to realizing the importance of balancing complex carbohydrates into your diet.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at, kind of where I'm at right now.
So how many, are you counting your carbs in terms of the total, that total macro? I'm just curious because your thoughts are on this low carb thing, on this low carb diet thing.
Right. What I do is I actually do, I use, MyFitnessPal.
Okay.
Which is an app that tracks, you know, what you consume right now. Cause I'm trying to, I'm on a challenge with some friends and we're on a 75 day challenge and I'm just trying to drop those dreaded 10 pounds that I'm always finding again, you know, first of the year, kind of thing. So I'm kind of really conscious about doing that. So I just like to give everybody, it's not a one size fits all, you know, and I really do encourage that people figure out what your macros are, what your individual macros are. And depending on what your weight is, your goals, how active or sedentary you are, those apps like MyFitnessPal will help you determine what your individual macros are, you know, but anywhere between 50 to 100 grams of carbs a day is pretty low, is what I would consider low.
Yep.
If people are going to talk about, you know, what's considered low, you know, I mean, just watch your sugar intake. You know, if something's going to have more than 4 or 5 grams of sugar, I usually just avoid it. You know, it's just a matter of checking and being aware of what you put in your mouth, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. So then with it, just cause I love this conversation because, we hear so many different things in society. What's good, what's bad, low carb, not low carb, low fat, not low fat, low, you know, plant-based proteins. Right. Like, so there's all these misconceptions about macronutrients in general. What macronutrients should we be consuming? What macronutrients should we not be consuming? Or what should be at a low level and what should be at a high level? And I, that was one of the reasons I really was excited to talk to you, like looking at your Instagram page and looking at like what you're doing and what information you're putting out, because you're putting out something, this information about low carb, but it's not the thought process. It doesn't seem like it's a thought process. I mean, we're eliminating all of these starchy and complex carbohydrates and we should only be at this number. And like, it doesn't seem like that's the message. And that's awesome, because it's really important, especially for pre-diabetics and type twos, to understand that carbs aren't the enemy. And diabetics in general, a lot of even type ones that I talk to think that carbohydrates are the enemy and they just want to lower to the lowest amount of carbohydrates they can possibly get to. And that's not what we're talking about here. That's why there are three macronutrients that we consume. And we have to, I love what you said about trying to figure out what your macronutrients are in whatever way that is. And there's tons of different ways you can do that, either by using an app, talking to a professional, talking to a coach that understands what they're talking about. But it's a very important piece, because if you don't understand what your macronutrients are, if you don't understand how your body's going to utilize those macronutrients, and I think that's the other piece that people forget about this whole nutrient dense foods, is because depending on the quality of the foods that you're consuming is all going to be dependent also, and how your blood sugars respond to that is also going to be dependent on what your lifestyle is. Do you drink? Absolutely. Do you smoke? Do you get enough sleep? Do you drink enough water? Do you exercise? What type of exercise? Because I mean, that's a whole nother rabbit hole we can go down.
It all affects your blood sugar.
Yeah.
All of that.
Yeah. So that's awesome. Talk to me about your journey now, like compared to when you kind of came out of denial and started doing all this research, and like what's kind of a couple big things that you learned in terms of whether that's food, whether that's food and blood sugar, whether it's food with exercise, like what are some big things that you learned coming out of denial and really, really started researching all of this that really helped you?
It's going to have to be, without a doubt, complex carbohydrates.
Okay.
The importance of complex carbs. I was in huge denial that I needed them, or that they were, that I could eat them.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly thought that complex carbs are going to spike my blood sugar. They're going to put me in the reverse direction that where I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually did a lot of studies when I was wearing a CGM.
Mm.
So it's a continuous glucose monitor, for those that might not be aware, and you attach it to your body. And it gives you live, via an app, which is incredible, on your phone, live data. So I did a lot of testing, and I shocked myself. I was so surprised that, as an example, oatmeal. I had avoided oatmeal for years because I thought that's just going to spike my blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
But I tried it with mixing a scoop of protein powder, a little healthy fat with some peanut butter, mixed it all up. My blood sugar was completely stable.
Yep.
The next day, I did the same bowl of oatmeal, but I didn't add a healthy fat or a protein, and I went, whew.
Mm-hmm.
That just blew me away.
Yeah.
So that in itself has shown me that, and also the way that you eat food, the whole format of, your fiber first,
mm-hmm.
your veggies first, and then your protein or healthy fat. And then you can incorporate your carb last. And again, you'll see such a lower response in your blood sugar just by the way that you eat your food.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such an eye opener for me. I have never even imagined that the way that you eat your food would drastically improve your blood sugar response. So that's what I'm just trying to preach and let people know, that don't be afraid of complex carbohydrates. They're not the enemy. And
mm-hmm.
and even a simple carb, if you pair it first with a protein and a healthy fat, then, don't completely eliminate it. Give it a shot. But I do suggest that people do check their sugars, know where they're at, so they know what's going to affect them and what's not going to affect them. What's a trigger, what's not a trigger.
When you were diagnosed with prediabetes, did they give you a glucose monitor and give you like a thought process of this is how many times you should check your blood sugar? Or they just said, hey,
It was never even mentioned to me until fast forward. I'm doing what I'm doing now as a social media influencer, and I get approached by a company that wants to sponsor me. And I was like, what is a CGM? I didn't even know what it was.
Yep.
So they had to explain it to me. I felt like a stupid person. Mm-hmm. But that was such a huge tool for me in realizing what I could eat. Yeah. So unfortunately, my medical community did not help me at all.
Yeah, we see this. Yeah, we unfortunately see this crazy trend with adults right now, type 1 and type 2, of the lack of information that's going out to individuals. And there's a part of me, because I understand the medical system, and I've had long conversations with endocrinologists. I've had long conversations with doctors on why this is the case. And of course, they're all defending the lack of information or their thought process of what information should be given to an individual and what shouldn't be. And I think the biggest underlining issue, there's one big underlining issue that I think every intelligent doctor, intelligent endocrinologist has that they're fighting against every single time I meet with a patient, and that's time.
Right.
They simply don't have the time to educate an individual like they should be educated.
Right.
And that's why we're seeing an uptick of coaches. That's why we're seeing an uptick of influencers. That's why we're seeing an uptick of dietitians that are going out in the private sector and don't want to be part of the medical system because we have this time concept thought process, which I think that the next step of this evolution, which is really cool for people like us, is that endocrinologists, doctors are going to start trusting us more with helping support their ideologies and their concepts of not taking over for dietitians, not taking over for them, but being able to support the education process. And that really excites me as a coach. It really excites me, because if we all can get on the same page, we can defeat this obesity crisis. We can defeat this crisis of uptick in diagnosis in autoimmune diseases. I really believe we can do that. But the problem that we're all facing is this time problem. We're also facing this problem that I get so irritated about, and it's the lack of understanding or trust, right? Mm-hmm. So right now, dietitians in that community, in that system, doctors, endocrinologists, specialists, they don't trust us because we're not licensed. Mm-hmm. I was on an incredible panel over the weekend, and I was on this panel with this dietitian, an incredible woman, right? I'm sure it's the first time I met her, but she's a dietitian. She works for the hospitals, and she was having issues fielding some of the questions that were basic nutrition questions. And the frustrating piece for me is that I have all this knowledge, I have all this information. You have all this knowledge. You have all this information. You've done so much research. But because we're not licensed, we can't talk about something that we probably know more about than a lot of other people that are licensed. And that doesn't mean that every single person that's licensed doesn't know what they're talking about, because they mm-hmm. do. They're way smarter than us. That's why they're licensed. Sure. But I just think that if we can all come together in a cohesive, supportive group with no judgment and overwhelming support for each other, that's how we can change the world. in terms of helping the medical system get better, and they don't even have to change what they're doing. They just have to trust that we can help them and support them.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Allow them to at least allow us to help.
Yeah. Allow us. Yeah. Allow us to help with the education process. But of course, the problem is you get those one or two coaches that think they know more than they do, or you get those one or two coaches that step over the line of getting out of their scope of practice. And I have to watch that all the time too, because I've done so much research and I've done so much experimentation on myself that I know what works. I know, that we know what works. And I have to sometimes catch myself of like, take a step back, stay in your scope of practice, and people will trust and believe you when you do that. It's a slippery slope that we all have to continue to walk, but I think it's a fun uphill battle that we're continue to climb this mountain to be able to support the medical system in whatever way we can, even if we don't 100% agree with it, with the way it's being run.
True.
We can't control that. And no. It's taken me a long time to get past those thought processes of like resentment because I know more than someone, or it's taken me a long time to get past that. And I really think that now I'm finally to a point where it's like, okay, I'm just here to support them. That's it. I can't control anything else but that.
Right. We have no control of that.
Yep. Yep. So how are things going now? Are you still your blood sugars now? Are they still in the pre-diabetes realm?
I am. I'm able to maintain it because I've learned how to control it. I've learned how to, keep it at a regular maintained level.
Yeah.
I go in for regular A1C tests, a couple times a year, and I'm usually where I need to be.
Yeah.
Where I'm happy.
Yeah. Good. That's awesome. What's the biggest?
It took a while to get there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a journey to figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. Have you had a C-peptide test done, at your one of your annual physicals? I'd be curious to know if you have. You should do that. Now that you've been on this health journey in terms of fixing your blood sugars and looking at foods in a different way, I'd be really interested to know what that C-peptide test says to see how much free-flowing insulin you have and how that's going.
That would definitely be something I'm going to actually write that down so I remember to ask for that next time.
Yeah, next time you have to get your blood drawn for your A1C or whatever, I think that's a really good test to continuously, as a type 2 and a type 1, just to continuously try to do as a pre-diabetic and a type 2, because it's going to give you some insight on are you losing beta cell function? Are you losing the ability to fight to use your insulin in a good way? And ultimately, that's also going to give you some insight on, are you close to being able to cure your type 2 diabetes, or are you really close to being able to get out of pre-diabetes ranges, so now you're not considered pre-diabetes anymore, pre-diabetic anymore.
Is that exactly how far really it can determine all that? I wasn't sure exactly.
Well,
what
it's not going to determine all that. So the C-peptide test is basically it's a test that's going to allow your doctor to look at a bunch of different things, but the main thing that it really looks at is how much free-flowing insulin do you have, right? And this is a test that they do for if you have high blood sugars and you're young. They do this test all the time because it's going to test for type 1 diabetes, because typically if you're type 1 diabetic, you don't have tons of free flowing insulin going on, or you can't produce it very much. And also they should be doing this for type 2s as well, for even adults. So I don't understand why it's not the first test that they're doing. A lot of times they're pricking fingers and they're not doing a blood draw test, or they're not doing the C-peptide test. And the C-peptide test is going to tell you right now do we need to do another test because we suspect type 1? Do we need to do another test because we suspect type 2? Or are we on the line? We know we're either type 1 or type 2. So I've talked to plenty of individuals, mostly adults, because a lot of adults are being misdiagnosed with type 2 diabetes when they should be type 1 diabetes, that didn't get a C-peptide test, that didn't even really get a hemoglobin A1C test. And they're just saying, oh, well, you're type 2, without doing any other real testing. And there's other tests that you can do, but the C-peptide test, I'm pretty sure, is the standard of the tests that they do.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I would love to have that.
That'd be cool. That would be really interesting to know, like, you know, what that looks like.
Absolutely.
If you're still in that pre-diabetes blood sugar ranges, I'm sure the C-peptide test is going to show a decent amount of still good functioning beta cells. So I don't know though, because I'm not a doctor, but that would be my third. I would just be interested to know what that looks like.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for that info.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. What's some things that, what's like one to three things that you could tell like the listeners that you've been able to either put into play with your practice, with your eating habits, with your thought processes that like someone could put like into action right now?
A lot of people I talk to are just, they're really scared. They're afraid that, low carb sugar free lifestyle, that they can't handle it. You know, I hear from people all the time, oh, I just love bread, or I just love desserts. And I just try to make people understand that you don't have to completely eliminate everything. You know, you can have that stuff. It's just a matter of learning how to eat it. Obviously desserts and high sugar desserts aren't great, but I have a whole ebook on sugar-free desserts. I mean, you can create, if that's your jam, if you want to have desserts, then there's some really great desserts out there with some really, great sugar-free substitutes. Mm-hmm. Just start today, start reading your labels. Don't be afraid. Be aware of all the hidden sugars that you're eating. Because you'll be surprised, you know, where it's at. People are afraid that low carb sugar free isn't something that they can do. They have a family. I raised three men in my house at one time. I was feeding four grown men, my husband and my three boys, all on low carb sugar free because it's protein, healthy fats, veggies. If they want pasta or they want rice, I had it in the cabinet. They just, you know, we had those little instant, you know, rice things. They would just, they'd heat them up. Mm-hmm. And that, because back then I didn't realize how important complex carbs were, or I would have served a sweet potato with dinner or a quinoa or a brown rice.
Yeah.
But now I'm educated that way, where I understand the importance of that. So I do let people know that it's not cold turkey. You can have carbs. It's just a matter of learning how to eat them. Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid. Start today. Educate yourself on how to eat, what to eat. I've created a whole course to help people. That's kind of where I've kind of evolved, is to help people understand what to eat, you know, how to prepare your food. And it's not complicated. It doesn't have to be fancy. You don't have to have a lot of fancy recipes, just protein, half your plate with, you know, veggies, a quarter of your plate with a complex carb, and a quarter of your plate with a protein, you're good to go.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that I want to point out, because I've been talking about it a lot on my Instagram, on this show that you brought up, was food labels. And the thought process of how you read food labels, the thought process of what do you actually need to be looking at and what you actually don't need to be looking at, is a very fascinating thing to me. Because when we think about food labels, depending on the product, we see these big green labels all over boxes, and that say, like, you know, all natural or organic or whatever it says. And most of the time that's a bunch of bull. And it's
don't read the front. You read the back.
It's not actually really healthy for me or healthy for you.
Right.
I remember to when I was growing up, you know, we were tried to eat healthy, but we were uneducated. And I remember eating Special K and seeing that big label on Special K that says heart healthy and thinking that like, oh, this is a great cereal. Tasted good. It was all sugary, you know, like, but it's not. If you look at the back of the label, there's preservatives, there's tons of crap in it. And I love that you bring up food labels because it's an important piece to look at the food label and start identifying for yourself what's actually in it, because you'll be shocked at what these companies are allowed to put in our food. It's insane to me.
It's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. I mean, that's a whole other series we could talk about.
I think the other thing that irritates me too is like now that all these other countries are pulling like cereals off the shelves
that we allow in our country.
And we're not talking about that stuff.
We're still allowing all that stuff.
It's insane.
I see that all over my social media. Well, China is not allowing this product that America is serving to their, you know, people, mm-hmm. and they label it as healthy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so disturbing to me.
It is. It's crazy what we're continuing to eat. It's crazy that we're being misled on such a grand scale of the simple products, which is why we always, you know, all of us always talk about eating whole foods and fresh foods that are going to spoil within 7 to 14 days because you know you're getting a pretty good product.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it might be. You know, because then you have to look at, you know, organic versus non-organic. Then you have to have that conversation. Yeah. And, you know, so all these things are...
It's not affordable to eat healthy. It's unfortunate. It really is unfortunate. I mean, it really...
Yeah.
But...
I think when we talk about vegetables, when we talk about starches, when we talk about meats, I think it's... You're right. It's really hard to eat healthy in a very, very healthy way. So you have to do, my thought process, you have to do two things. One, it's about what you value, right? Because your values will start giving you understanding about where you're going to draw the lines.
Right.
Is that the quality of the food? Is that the price? Is that a combination of both? Is it a combination of other things? What is your actual value? What do you actually value when it comes to food?
Right.
Do you value just being able to feed your family, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. I have really dove into that concept for myself because it was never defined for myself. And I was just always like, okay, I'm going to eat all organic stuff. And then I started defining that for myself and saying, okay, well, I can draw the line on some things, right? Really focusing on the Dirty Dozen, really focusing on the Clean 15. All of those things are important because when we're talking about fruits and vegetables with the Dirty Dozen, it's like we know that stuff's being sprayed. We know that stuff's being filled with things that is causing cancer or things that are like, you know, making us more sick or things that inflame our system, whatever it might be. So thinking about the Dirty Dozen in terms of those are the foods that you should be 100% eating organic as much as possible and within your food values, but then also the Clean 15, you can now on those, you can kind of take a step and say, okay, I'm either going to do organic or I'm not going to do organic. So it's one of those things that I think is very important for people as they continue to elevate themselves and educate themselves about food, because those, and the CDC, the NIH, you name it, the health organizations out there, they come out with the different Dirty Dozen, a different Dirty Dozen every year, a different Clean 15 every year. So making sure that you understand what those are is very important.
Yeah. agree.
Yeah. So, well, girl, this has been incredible. I'm so glad that I got to connect with you. If people want to connect with you, my first question is, are you doing any like specific programs right now within your business? Does your business have a name? Where can people connect with you if they want to work with you, if they want to connect or answer questions? Where can they do all that stuff?
Well, Low Carb Norma, I'm on social media.
Yeah.
Low Carb Norma on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. I also have a website, lowcarbnorma.com. And you can reach me through there if you want to contact me. My email is set up through that. All of those accounts, you can find me there.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
I have a course, an online course that I'm really trying to get out there. And that's also available on all those channels. You can get access to that there and on my website.
Awesome. I love that. One of the last questions here, what is your favorite thing to either make or favorite thing to eat?
Wow. Does it have to be low carb sugar free?
It can be whatever you want it to be, right? It can be whatever you want it to be. It's because we think about, yeah, this is because I think about this in two different ways, right? And that's why I think like you and what you're doing on your social media in terms of advocating for healthy, wholesome foods, regardless high carbs, low carbs, low sugar, high, whatever it is, you advocating for this. I think it's important for people to understand that it's not just about living that 100% every single day. We have to have some freedom to do the other things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some people like that. Some people don't. And for me, it's one of those things. It's like I eat 100% healthy, organic about 80 to 90% of the time. Well, I'd say 85 to 90%, 90% of the time. The other 10 to 15%, I'm eating pizzas. The other 10 to 15%, I'm eating things that I've just always enjoyed and I'll never give up.
Yeah, and you shouldn't have to.
Yeah, and you shouldn't have to.
I don't think you should have to give up.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I 100% agree with you. You shouldn't have to. But the other thing that we have to recognize here is that 90% for me, that 90% isn't like scattered. It could be scattered all over the week, but it also shouldn't be like every single day, right? And the great example I have, especially for adults with this, is alcohol. People love, I mean, I love to drink sometimes. I love to have, you know, some beer or whatever like that. If I'm hanging out with friends or if I'm hanging out with family, or if it's a special holiday or special occasion, 100%. But then I sit in front of my fitness clients or my other clients that I work with, and we're talking about that specifically. And it's like, oh, I have a glass of wine every night. Okay, why? Why do you feel like you need that every single night? Some people, it's okay. Like if that's part of your values, cool, do it 100%. But it's like one of those things is like, we have to think about like, is this too much or is this, you know, is this too much of what we're doing and how are we defining what that is?
Everyone's values are different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going to get a different response depending on who you speak to. That's for sure.
Yeah. 100%.
Absolutely. And I don't know. I people ask me all the time, do you drink? Can you drink on low carb, sugar free? And my answer is, yeah, if that's something that you want to do, absolutely can.
100%.
Yeah. You just got to find a way to do that. And you know, it's those sugary mixers that are going to kill you. So you bring in your own mixer. You do a,
yeah,
seltzer water or something that doesn't have any sugar.
Yeah. I have a friend that, I have a dietitian friend that she advocates for dry farm wines because the sugar intake is super low.
They're very low. That's right. Yes. I actually have had some of that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to say anything in moderation because I mean, that's not true. But, I think if you just tell somebody that you completely have to go cold turkey and you can't have that ever again, that's just,
yeah, that's not sustainable. Nope. And it's hard enough to go cold turkey on something anyway, regardless of what it is. Like not every Absolutely. Person can do that. Some people can do it, some people can't. So just the success of going cold turkey is not, it's it's not realistic, I don't feel like. No,
not realistic.
Not realistic at all.
You're just going to blow it, and you're not going to achieve any goals. You're not going to learn how to live a lifestyle that you know, that's going to be beneficial to you.
And you're going to I think the biggest thing that I run into with people like that is resentment. The resentment of what they used to be able to do. Resentment,
that's right.
Emotions that come up. 100%.
Yep. So back to my favorite foods. I'm a foodie, and my thing is cooking for people. I love, that's like my love language. So
I love it.
Whatever they want, I will. Like I used to tell my kids, friends, and now when they come and visit, it's like, let me love on you. What would you like to eat? But for me, anything salty like fries, French fries, or potato chips, that would be like my downfall.
Yeah.
Popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
Salty crunch. But, you know, I just did some, this is going to sound bizarre, but I just did a video on Instagram and showed how I did this. Zucchini, I stripped them in really thin little strips, salt, a little spice, stuck in the air fryer, and they came out like these little crispy French fries. They were amazing. They're actually really good. My husband was actually shocked.
Yeah. I make some killer sweet potato fries. They're like awesome.
They're good too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You made them.
They don't get crispy enough for me though.
Well, you gotta cook them, girl. Like, now,
put them in an air fryer?
I will say I've never used an air fryer. I've always baked them, which sucks because I bake them for like 40 to 50 minutes.
Okay.
And then they have to cool because of that cooling after I bake them for a long time, then they cool and then they'll get crunchy. But I have had the times where I burnt them because I cooked them too. Because there's that happy balance of making them crunchy. Yeah.
They will burn on you. They absolutely will burn on you.
Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, I have not tried the air fryer. We need to buy an air fryer. We keep saying that. We need to buy
it. You know what? You're going to love it. You're never going to, you'll wonder, well, how did we live without one?
My brother-in-law cooks all of his chicken in the air fryer. Just like a tad bit of avocado oil and throw his chicken in there and it's done in 2 minutes.
Even awesome for reheating your pizza.
Yeah. So we do nice everything in the Instapot. We're doing everything in the Instapot right now, which is another great, great thing.
I am very scared of my Instapot. Really? I don't like that steamy thing on the top.
Oh,
I've never figured it out.
That's just the pressure of it, man.
It scares me.
You got to look up some recipes on Pinterest.
Oh, believe me, I have.
Oh.
And the whole thing just scares me.
So then don't hit the knob to make it unsteam. Just turn it off.
Okay.
Like when it's done cooking and wait another, you have to wait another 10, 20 minutes, but it'll self-regulate and it will like take all the pressure out itself.
I'll dust it off and pull it back out again. But
it's so good. It's amazing.
Yeah, I hear that, but
No more baking stuff forever. Like no more using the crock pot for so long. Like my wife makes roasts in the Instapot and it's like 15, 20 minutes. It's done.
What? All right. I mean, that's the reason I bought it, but I just get so scared of that thing on the top.
Yeah. We do. Okay, well. Our staple right now is, there's two staples that we do in the Instapot right now. The first one is, it's amazing. It's buffalo chicken, basically buffalo chicken dip. So literally all it is, it's chicken in the Instapot. So we'll do like three breasts. And then Primal Kitchen has this incredibly healthy buffalo sauce.
I love Primal Kitchen.
Oh, it's amazing. So just put a jar of the buffalo sauce in there, 15 minutes, it's done.
That's what I'm making for Super Bowl on Sunday, actually.
Yeah. I take each one out. Like I'm a freaking shredding like master right now. Like shred. I mean, it just literally comes out and everything just like shreds like crazy. So just shred everything, throw it back. It literally, I can eat it from the time I put it in and the time that I can take a bite. It's like 20 minutes. Insane.
That is insane. And it's raw when you put it in there? I can't even believe
it. Yeah, it's raw. And it cooks all the way through. Like, yeah, these big, I mean, these things. I'm a dude. I love me some meat. I love me some meat.
There's chicken breast.
A full chicken breast. Yep. A full organic chicken breast.
Really?
Yep. 100%. Yep.
All right. Okay. You've won me over again. I'll have to dust that machine off.
You got to dust it off. I'm telling you. It's amazing.
It scares me.
Yeah, it's amazing. I want to go make some buffalo chicken dip right now.
I need to stuff the buffalo chicken inside. I'm doing it inside the little mini peppers.
Oh, yes. That's great, too. I love pepper, like stuffed peppers. Oh, stuffed peppers are incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My appetizer. One of my appetizers.
What else are you making for the Super Bowl?
Doing husband's barbecue and some tri-tip and chicken.
Nice.
And I'm going to make these spicy wings.
Ooh. See, we need to come to your house. Everyone, we need to go over to Norma's house.
Welcome. Where do you live?
I live in Columbus, Ohio. California? Yeah.
Oh.
I'm not in California. I'll just hop on a plane and come over.
You do that.
Yeah.
You're welcome anytime.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you again. This was amazing. Everyone, if you're listening, please reach out to Norma because I've been watching her since I was able to connect with her, watching what she's posting. The things that she's posting is awesome in terms of overall health. You hear me always talk about wholesome foods. She's showing us how to do that. So make sure that you go on and follow her page. Ask her questions about the foods that she's making because these foods look amazing. I might send her some DMs and ask her, hey, what's this recipe? Because these foods look awesome. So please reach out to her. Norma, thank you so much for coming on. It was great to connect and have you on the show. Thank you to everyone who's listening, and I will see you next time.
All right. Take care.